I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. We are awaiting Romeo Crennel, Texans head coach, his Wednesday press conference. We'll carry it here live in advance of the game against the Packers on Sunday. There's a funny text message. We were talking with John McClain about Bill O'Brien's moves, and Seth got pretty heated about Zach Cunningham's contract vis-a-vis his performance this year, which has not been good. It's a great analogy, Seth. Man, Billy O really screwed us. It's like getting divorced, and your ex apparently ran up all the credit cards in both your names, depleted the 401k, and is now demanding alimony.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Boy, speaking of that, I don't know. This feels like it's somehow related, even though it's not. But I jokingly suggested that what do the Texans do if J.J. Watt comes to Cal and says, hey, unless you guys hire Brett Bielema, I'm going to make a huge stink about everything. I'm gonna tell all the stories and all the lies. So during the break, we started looking into Brett Bielema's situation. This summer, he was sued by the Arkansas Foundation, whoever's in charge of paying him, the Razorback Foundation. Because he had this buyout clause that they settled where it was a $12 million buyout agreement signed in 2018 where they would have to pay him through 2020 with an offset of any other high-paid coaching jobs that he got. Like, so if he got a head coaching job somewhere and they paid him $1 million a year, yeah, then, oh, okay, then Arkansas wouldn't have to pay that $1 million that year. So Bielema has basically been like a defensive consultant with the Patriots for a couple years. I think he's a linebackers coach with the Giants this year. He's taken relatively low-paying jobs. I'm sure he's still making six figures, but low six figures. And what the Arkansas Foundation is claiming is that you haven't done enough to try to get a head coaching job. To which my reply would be, social media. Just look at any of the pictures that have surfaced on social media of Brett Bielema over the last few years. Oh. The man is all about living life at this point. I think he maybe has tried to get a head coaching job, but any self-respecting AD is going to be like, dude, you are enjoying life too much to be my head coach.
He's such a slob. I can say that now. I've dropped the 40 pounds now. Like, I can say it without being hypocritical. He's a slob. He's disgusting.
I think that makes you more of a hypocrite.
What are you talking about? I'm not a slob anymore.
You're the coach.
Shaming
him? You're the
coach
he used to have in, like, youth football that's, like, 50 pounds overweight and smoking a cigar as he's screaming at you to run harder during wind sprints.
Yeah. We call that a Mark Mangino. That was always my favorite. That was my favorite Mangino take. Like, boy, you got to bring Mangino in as a head coach. He's a real disciplinarian. I'm like, not when he gets near the kitchen table. He's not. At all. So, we appreciate the Bielema research there, Seth. So,
yeah, it was probably the most productive thing I could have done with my time this morning. I've got a to-do list that's like four pages long, but I decided to spend 7 minutes on Brett Bielema. I'm still intrigued by Bielema. I feel like, look, Bielema was a Big Ten Coach of the Year.
Oh, he's a rising star. There's a reason he got the Arkansas job.
Right. Like, what the hell happened to Bielema? Yeah. I think it's that he just enjoys life too much.
Well, he met his wife at a blackjack table, which as I sit here and make fun of his portliness, I can respect meeting your future partner in life at a blackjack table. Like that, that I think is, I think you learn a lot about people sitting at a blackjack table.
I don't know. Yeah, but I guess, like, what does that mean? Oh, it's just the fact that he met. I feel like when you say that, it's automatically like saying something about the, saying something about the purity of his wife.
Yeah. No, it's just a random place to meet people. So, okay, Romeo's at the right. Romeo's at the podium. Let's go to Romeo Cornell.
Oh, okay.
A fair amount of time later.
All right, that was Romeo Cornell's press conference. He did say one thing, and Seth, I think for the first time, and we'll save this for the next segment. I think for the first time, Romeo Cornell said something in a press conference that got me half hot, like not in a good way.
Yeah. And I think, not hot, like when you heard him say, he kind of said in a smooth voice about Aaron Rodgers, he's tremendous.
Yeah.
Like that could have gotten you hot, like in a Barry White way.
Right.
But no, you got hot in an angry way.
In an angry way, and I will tell you what he said that got me a little bit heated in the next segment. Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Wednesday, Sports Radio 610. All right, so Romeo Cornell just met with the media, and for the first time in a Romeo Cornell press conference as the interim head coach, he said something that got me a little heated, and not in a good way, a little angry. And Seth, I saw you react to it as well, and I think you and I may be on the same page here. This team has major, major issues tackling ball carriers right now. They are a poor, poor tackling team. At the beginning of the year, the excuse was that we didn't have a training camp. Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle asked the question, hey, that was the reason that was given at the beginning of the year. We're six games in now. What's the reason why the tackling is still not up to par? Here was Romeo Crennel's answer.
Well, we're several games into the season, but all of those things that they said still apply. You know, you're not tackling much because you don't tackle at practice. And the time you get the chance to tackle is in the game when it's for real. And so bad habits kind of carry over, and we have to try to eliminate those bad habits, which we'll try to do at practice. But, you know, without taking guys to the ground, you really can't practice tackling. And so we're not going to take them to the ground, because if you lose a guy in practice and you don't have a guy for the game, then, you know, what's the benefit of it? Okay. It's a thin line that we walk to try to get it done. And I think one of the things that can help us the most is everybody winning their gap when we're gapped out defense, and then hustle and effort to the ball.
Okay, here's the thing about this. All 32 teams had the same rules in place with regard to the coronavirus and the preseason. All 32 teams operate under the same rules as far as hitting a practice goes. All 32 teams function under the same umbrella. This is not like 2017, where the Texans all of a sudden had a hurricane dropped into the middle of their preseason, and the other 31 teams were functioning as normal. That would have been a logical thing for the first 3 or 4 weeks of that season to use as an excuse. That would have been a forgivable thing. It's unforgivable how bad this defense is at tackling. And by the way, it's a veteran defense. The rookies don't get on the field. These are all guys who've played tons and tons and tons of football. That Zach Cunningham tries to tackle people while standing up and thinks that grabbing them at the base of their shoulder pads while standing straight up is an acceptable way to tackle has nothing to do with the coronavirus being dropped in the middle of the preseason or not being able to hit at practice. That's just crappy tackling. That's just... it's laziness in some ways. So that answer, Seth, and boy, it takes a lot for Romeo Cornell to get me mad, because he doesn't, I mean, I can't remember one time I've heard an answer, especially in the aftermath of the Bill O'Brien era, where I haven't been, boy, I just love having Rack as the head coach. But that answer bothers me, man. Like that bothers me.
And it should bother you too, Sean, because there are ways to practice tackling without going to the ground. Like, there are time-tested ways to tackle without, like... That really surprised me to hear him say that. It's, yes, there are ways to practice tackling without live tackling. I'll go back to Ronnie Lott talking about it back when he was a player, because he had such a reputation as a ferocious hitter, and yet he played for a team that never wore full pads. And it wasn't just him himself. Like, they had good defenses where they worked the heavy bag a lot. You use bags. You use tackling drills. You do the same things that rugby players do. And individuals becoming really good tacklers or bad tacklers, yeah, some of it's on them. But as a team, like, good tackling teams don't happen by accident. teams that tackle well, it's not like they scout a bunch of guys that are really good at tackling in college and that's why they're good tacklers. It's worked at. It's like all those things that Romeo Crennel was talking about, they're worked on in practice. And it's not an excuse. Just like you said, Sean, once you get a few weeks into the season and everybody had the limited training camp, everybody has the same restrictions on how much they can practice during the week, then as soon as other teams are tackling well and you're not, you can't use that as an excuse anymore. So I do think this. I'd like to go, and I'm having the damnedest time finding tackling stats on some of the advanced sites. I would like to figure out exactly how many of the missed tackles are due to Zach Cunningham. Because the problem with Zach Cunningham missed tackles are that, A, he makes them look more unique. It's honestly, his insistence on staying standing while making a tackle is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in organized football.
Have you ever seen it with another player ever? Like this obsession with it?
No. Like maybe back in like youth football when there are some kids that are afraid to hit, but we know that Zach Cunningham's not afraid to hit.
Yeah, I meant in the NFL.
I had to think about it a long time before I even said it publicly. Like I had to check myself and go back and watch him. He's got this need to stay standing as he's making the tackle. Even on some of his big hits, he wants to stand up and throw guys to the ground, but it results in some of the weirdest missed tackles because there's times where he's perfectly in position to make a nice and simple, easy tackle. Like, especially right after a tight end catches a football where, like, okay, a tight end's pretty easy to get down as long as you wrap them up. They're bigger, clunkier dudes. And he whiffs on it because he's trying to lasso the guy, or he tries to lasso a running back who goes on to run for 7 or 8 more yards. It's one of the strangest things I've ever seen in football. Let me think. There are a few weird things that I've seen in terms of players trying to go about their business. Sometimes, like at the lower levels, you have like offensive linemen that think they're going to be able to crab block everything. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like it. I think Zach Cunningham is coloring our perception of the missed tackle issues because he's such an extreme misser of tackles.
I can't think of it ever from somebody at a position where the key attribute that you need is to be a good tackler. Like I can think of cornerbacks that shy away from contact, you know, maybe going up top to grab and place guys on the ground as opposed to going in with a shoulder and hit. Not many of them, but that is a vision I have in my head. Never at a position. Zach Cunningham got the contract because of tackles. You know,
it's not like he's afraid of contact.
Yeah.
He'll come up and make huge hits. And there's other times where it's an easy tackle. Like, it's not like it would be punishing for him at all. So it's something beyond. It's not like he's a teenage kid that's afraid of contact or anything.
Right.
It's just. I maybe he thinks it's healthier to stay upright. Like you're less likely to get injured if you don't go to the ground.
Bro, you got your contract. Don't worry about it. You can go tackle free and clear now, you know?
That's what they used to say about Jack Lambert. You know, hell of a player. Can't tackle. That's
yeah,
what it always
yeah right.
Ray Lewis, hell of a player. Sideline to sideline.
Yeah, no.
Can't tackle.
Junior Seau. Boy, that Junior Seau sure didn't like contact at all.
It's a real way to gain glory as an inside linebacker.
Yeah, avoid contact. All right, let's go to the phones. Larry and Stafford heard that answer from Romeo Crennel is my sense on this. Larry, welcome into the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, Sean and Seth. Hey, look, I did. I heard that thing Rack said, man, and my blood pressure shot through the roof, man, because the other night when we were watching the Arizona Cardinals in a Cowboy game, you would see Buda Baker look like he was going. That was old school tackling and hitting. And now to make these excuses that we can't put people on the ground and all this other stuff after 6 weeks, what the hell do they do in that bubble over there when nobody's looking? Are they just doing an extended stay of calisthenics and stretching so that they can keep their little hamstrings from popping, which they do anytime? That answer was just one of the most insane things that I've heard, because if you're only getting tackling in the game, then it makes sense why your damn defense is ranked 32nd in the NFL. And not only that, Zach Cunningham and that whole standing up thing y'all talking about, it's not only bad that he's trying to stay on his feet and throw people down like I used to throw my son down on his mattress, but Zach Cunningham is jumping in the holes just to get out of the way of making hits. So it's all a bad thing over there. And I don't know what the hell they're teaching over there on Kirby, but that may be some of the dumbest ass backwards stuff that I've ever heard. And then, not only that comment, somebody asked Romeo, are y'all giving Deshaun the option to be able to change a play at the line of scrimmage? And Rex still said no. How is Deshaun Watson in his fourth year of football and he can't see a play at the line of scrimmage and go, damn, that's stupid. I'm going to check out of this and go to something else. That is crazy, man. And you wonder why we're 1-5. This is the kind of stuff that has permeated over there on Kirby, that has kept us in this position with this team, that we cannot get a figure as to why that administration over there is playing lousy-ass football. Sean, it made me sick, man. And I can tell you what, any more time that we sit here and watch other teams play as fast as they play and hit as hard as they hit, it's going to always be an indictment of that administration, and I'll holler.
I appreciate the phone call, Larry. Yeah, and the problem is, Seth, these are because of the contracts given out, these are not problems that you can just easily, the new regime, whoever it is, can easily move on from. Like, you got to fix Zach Cunningham. You can't fix Zach Cunningham by getting rid of Zach Cunningham. You got to fix Zach Cunningham by fixing Zach Cunningham.
The other thing, too, I try to remind myself of this, is that, okay, Romeo Crennel is the interim coach, and there's a reason that Romeo Crennel went 2-14 in Kansas City. He went 4-12 twice in Cleveland. Yeah. You know, like, there's a reason. So I'm trying. This is not the long-term solution. This is just, it's, hey, we're going to have a nice day with Romeo and maybe he'll do some good things, but it's just affirmation that he's not a good head coach in the NFL.
Well, I think if you're trying to take what it is, you know, you and I are sitting here, you know, picking apart, getting somewhat heated about, I think the way that you take it and push it forward is to go, okay, well, these are little things that we are going to be looking for in our next head coach. You know, whether if it's a defensive head coach who puts super hyper focus on tackling, brings a different either mentality or different, you know, teaching methods or whatever, or a coach who brings in a defensive coordinator, a veteran defensive coordinator who brings in something different. Like, I think we're the same way we are assessing everything from the Bill O'Brien era, I think you assess who's there now with Romeo Crennel, and it helps you kind of formulate your checklist of things that you hope the next head coach brings to the table.
Yeah.
You know? So, all right. The number is 713-572-4610 if you've got thoughts. Speaking of head coaches around the league, proof that Mike Vrabel, while he doesn't get put on the Belichick tree as a coach, he never coached for Bill Belichick. People get that twisted sometimes. He played for Bill Belichick, never coached for him. He may as well be part of the Belichick head coaching trio, and we'll let you hear why next. The game on Sunday with the Titans and the Texans was really interesting from a strategy standpoint. You know, Romeo's decision to go for two, up seven, that would have given the Texans a 9-point lead with under 2 minutes to go, I think is something that you don't see very often. It's becoming a little more conventional, but it's very analytics.
Yeah, it's happened. It's happened like seven times in the last decade, I believe.
Yeah, and it makes sense. You know, I thought it made a lot of sense for Romeo to do it. I know there's been a heavy debate over that, but that was really interesting. Mike Vrabel did something down the stretch in that game that I thought was really, really smart. And I've long felt, Seth, that, you know, look, when you root for your team, you can feel angst about certain situations in games. And boy, when you are the team that is trailing in a game and the other team has the football and they're trying to grind the clock out, it's long been my feeling that one of the worst downs to be on the other end of when you're the defense trying to get off the field in that situation is 2nd and 1. Because it's almost like a free 40 seconds for the offense. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost, when the offense, you know, the Texans, and the reason I bring this up is the Texans had a first down with about 3.5 minutes to go, and they ran a play that got about 9 yards. I forget what the play was, but it was 2nd and 1, and the clock is running. And the Texans are trying to burn the clock out, bleed the clock out, and either go in for a score or just end the game with the ball still in their hands, maybe taking victory formation or at least get the Titans to use some of their timeouts. Instead of burning a timeout in that situation on 2nd and 1, because the chances are the Texans are going to get the first down anyways, Vrabel sent a 12th man onto the field and essentially voluntarily penalized himself. and gave the conceded the first down to the Texans because it was more valuable that the Texans be in first and 10 with the clock stopped than in second and one with the clock rolling at that point. And so Vrabel, and his players were looking over at him. Jonathan Joseph was looking over at him like, what are you doing sending in a 12th guy right now?
Some people probably remember watching on TV, like, what was going on? Why is Jonathan Joseph looking angrily to the sideline and confused? I remember wondering what was going on.
Yeah.
And this is because of a rule change that was made in 2011. Because in the Super Bowl, the Patriots had the ball while the Giants had a lead. The Giants were called for 12 men on the field, and the Patriots ended up losing time because of the penalty that they never got back. So the league tried to be proactive and say, okay, it's ironic that it was the Patriots, right? That they did it to protect something bad that happened to the Patriots, and then Bill Belichick would go on to exploit it a couple years ago. Mike Vrabel's exploited it as well versus Bill Belichick, and this was a very heads-up, smart move by him.
It was really, really smart. So they get the 12 men on the field penalty, and the Texans are then in first and 10, and it was funny to go back and watch it. I watched it this morning, Seth. I rewatched it, and we'll hear from Vrabel in just a second on it. But Rich Gannon, who was just adamant that Romeo Crennel was the dumbest guy in the world for the two-point conversion, Rich Gannon was not seeing it either. Like, Rich Gannon thought that was just a crucial error that the Titans had made in that situation, you know, just sloppiness and things like that, when in fact Vrabel was doing it intentionally to A, stop the clock, and B, put the Texans in first and 10 instead of having them in second and one, which, again, second and one is a death down for a defense that's trying to get off the field in a clock-burning moment. Maybe it's wonky to explain on the radio, but Mike Vrabel, it was a really, really smart move. Now, when Vrabel was asked about it in his press conference this week, he played very, very coy. Maybe here is the proof that Vrabel really, truly does belong on the Belichick tree.
Yeah, Mike, question for you on that late 12 men on the field penalty against you guys. I guess first question, was that, you know, intentionally done to stop the clock?
You know, we have to do a better job with penalties. You know, we had 7 of them, I think, pretty uncharacteristic. You know, we had a few on offense, so, you know, we have to be better in all areas, and I think the penalties are one thing that we focus on. You know, communicating, trying to give ourselves the best chance to win a football game.
The pause at the beginning of the answer, Seth, tells you everything, because the last thing Mike Vrabel wants to do is admit that he did it intentionally, because then the competition committee may sit down and close the loophole he just exploited.
That was that right there was, I tweeted that out this morning, and people thought I was talking about the actual tactic of stopping the clock. No. The press conference and the complete just not acknowledging the question at all and going on to give some platitude, but without doing it angrily or anything. I think sometimes people think that Belichick is more surly in press conferences than he actually is. Every now and then he kind of snarls at a reporter, but classic Belichick in a press conference is where he just gives a response so boring that it feels like it must be passive aggressive. And it's just, it's his total way of just putting up a facade of not going to give you anything here one way or the other. And it's masterful. So good job by Vrabel, who is a lot of times in his press conference, he's completely unlike Belichick. He's got way more natural personality than Belichick. But that right there was total Belichick.
713-572-4610. Some of you want to get in on this tackling topic here. We were talking about Romeo Crennel and his answer that the Texans, well, you know, that's COVID and you can't bring guys to the ground and we don't have a lot of padded practices.
Which, by the way, because I've had two responses. A bunch of people have said, well, tackling is bad all over the league. Okay, that might be the case, but according to Pro Football Reference, the Texans are the third worst in the league at tackling ball carriers right now. So, hey, tackling might be bad all around the league, but the Patriots have half as many. Wait, I'm sorry, almost a third as many missed tackles as the Houston Texans. Okay. The Patriots are first in the league. So, no, the Texans are definitively bad at missing tackle. Well, I guess they're good at missing tackles. Okay. I should say that, you know what? More positive frame of mind. They're third best in the league at missing tackles, Sean.
They're really, really good at not tackling people.
The other response that I'm getting is, well, hey, these guys should know how to tackle. To which I reply, oh, yeah, because they've been practicing it their whole life. I guess that's why pro golfers stop practicing their swing, because they did it a lot when they were younger, so they must remember how to do it now. Yeah. Like, no, it's hard to tackle large human beings that are very, very fast. You got to continue to work on it and practice it, which I know, like, it boggles my mind that Romeo Crennel thinks that there's no way to practice tackling without going to the ground. There's like 2,000 ways to practice it.
713-572-4610. Let's go out to Cyprus, talk to Ken. Ken, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. How are you?
Really good. I kind of agree with Seth that it's partially the coaching, but I can't say it's not all coaching. These guys are paid professionals, and it's like, I don't think it's just the practice. I think it's they're not getting the encouragement. They're not getting fired up by the coaching staff to go out there and do the job right.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, you can't put it all on a player.
Right. Well, I mean, we could say the same thing about that too, right? Like, is it up to the coaches to fire guys up? Is it up to the coaches? I mean, it's pro sports, so it's on both of them. I think that at least part of it is that Zach Cunningham's missed tackles are so bad. I honestly found the team, like, these advanced stats with the missed tackles. It's not advanced stats, but and I thought, like, okay, maybe the Texans are actually middle of the road and Zach Cunningham's are just that bad and just so notable. But it is the entire team. I think part of it is that they've got guys out there on defense that just aren't good defensive football players, yeah. Right? And a lot of the guys that are missing tackles just aren't good football players. Zach Cunningham is better than he's been playing, so he's missing some too. And then I think at least part of it is there's a reason. It doesn't happen by accident that teams practice well. The Seattle Seahawks have a video on YouTube. You can go watch Pete Carroll talking about rugby-style tackling. Back in the Legion of Boom days, it wasn't just by accident that those guys were the best tackling team in football. They really, really worked at it. Like, they made a concerted effort in the offseason, during the regular season, to practice tackling without pads on and to do all these rugby drills. And it's something that can be improved. And I honestly think a lot of the takes that I get whenever I talk about tackling kind of show how bad the tackling instruction is throughout football. So when you say, hey, these guys have practiced tackling from the time they were 12 years old, very few people have actually been taught proper tackling technique. They think they have, and some coaches think they're teaching proper tackling form. I didn't get proper tackling instruction until my fourth year in the NFL by Frank Gantz Sr., who was a special teams coach with the Jaguars. That was honestly the first time anybody had actually really appropriately taught me how to tackle. And I think everybody before me thought they were, but they just didn't know what they were doing. So it's frustrating to me when I hear somebody like Romeo Crennel, who kind of minimizes the ability to practice football or practice the basics of football, because he's part of the problem, you know? I mean, he's like, that's the old school way, is like guys that think like, well, the way you practice football is you go out and you smack each other around until somebody ends up on the ground.
Yeah. Someone said, can you give context to the Vrabel intentional 12 men on the field penalty? How many more plays were run after that penalty? It was second and one with the clock running at the Tennessee 25. Brandon Cooks had just had a 9-yard catch on first down. And they threw the 12th man onto the field and the clock stopped with 3:05 left in regulation. So the Texans got moved up 5 yards. They got first and 10. And then the Texans threw the fade to Will Fuller, incomplete pass. So they only ran 4 seconds off the clock. And then David Johnson got the 11-yard run to get another first down. Tennessee uses a timeout. It's first and goal at the 9. Deshaun Watson runs that option play to the left to the 1-yard line. Again, clock running. But the 2-minute warning happened after that. The bottom line is that throwing the 12th man onto the field, because I don't know that this is great radio, me going through the play-by-play, it saved the Titans a timeout that they ended up being able to use on that final drive, is what it did.
Yeah, and the problem is it's not because Romeo Crennel. I hope I don't mess this up. Romeo Crennel doesn't really have the option of them not stopping the clock, because the whole reason the rule is this way is because they used to just let the play go on with 12 men on the field and then stop it after and then penalize them afterwards, because that way if the offense had a great play they could just say, oh no, we'll take it, but then the offense also loses time if they're trying to come from behind. So I yeah, we're getting too technical on this. It was a really heady play that, and it was a way to exploit one of those wrinkles in the rules that not a lot of people do, but Vrabel just knew when to do it, and this isn't the first time he's done it.
Yeah, so there you go.
I get too worked up about talking about tackling, but Sean, now I'm really distraught that the Texans are indeed the third worst in the NFL.
So that's by the missed tackle metric is what you're pulling at?
Okay. The Jets are atrocious. They've missed 64 tackles.
That was my next question. Who are the who are the two teams that are worse than the Texans?
The worst. Okay, these are the four teams that have missed more than 50 tackles in this short season so far.
Wow,
the
50.
New York Jets.
That's like eight or nine a game.
Well, on that one play, that Jonnu Smith play, like three guys missed tackles all on one play.
Oh, my God.
Let's see. The Jets, I honestly feel like they're pretty – this is kind of like errors in baseball. There's a certain amount of judgment that goes into it.
Yeah.
And I'm always surprised that there aren't more missed tackles on the stats. I think it's got to be an egregious missed tackle. They don't give it to you. Like, if you hit the running back – like, as he's got a full head of steam in the backfield and he keeps going and you're, like, diving at him, they don't call that a missed tackle.
Yeah.
So, the Jets have missed 64. The Raiders have missed 56.
Okay.
Texans, they show with 54 missed tackles. They're in third place.
Okay.
The Carolina Panthers with 51.
Boy, that's interesting. I mean, two of those four teams are actually having decent seasons. You know,
the Raiders and the Panthers are
actually okay teams.
The Packers are sixth. The Chiefs are seventh in worst amongst missed tackles.
Wow. Okay.
Well, the Chiefs are an atrocious run defense too. The Chiefs have a whole lot of feel of the early Peyton Manning era Indianapolis Colts. The Indianapolis Colts Peyton Manning era in the early days when their defenses were just, they could make plays, you know, they could rush the passer, but when it came to stopping the run, they almost just didn't care about it.
Yeah, they gave up 77 yards to David Johnson. That's like giving up 250 yards to anybody else.
Yeah, remember those days? Those were the salad days. We're like, wow, they did it versus an emerging defense in the Kansas City Chiefs. Look at them.
The salad day, you mean. The salad days make it sound like it was an era.
That was the salad Thursday evening.
That's it. It was a salad 3 hours is what that was.
And then the Patriots are just astoundingly good with only 19 missed tackles.
Are they the best?
They're the best, the Broncos, and then the Colts. So speak of the devil, the Colts are third best in the league.
Yeah, the Colts are going to be a problem, man. And the Colts are – Philip Rivers has got to feel great. Like, he's like, wow, I actually have a roster around me that's able to overcome all my dumb mistakes. You know,
this is great. He actually did the opposite of what people expect of the Chargers this last week. Yeah. They actually clinched it in the fourth quarter.
That's right. So the Patriots are the best. Yeah, and Vic Fangio. Does it surprise you that a Vic Fangio coach team is really good at tackling? You played for Vic Fangio.
No, not necessarily. I mean, Vic's had some bad defenses, you know, in his time. It's just, it seems like Vic has gotten better with age.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Vic must have really learned exactly how to find the right balance in, like, how complex his scheme is versus how much his players can absorb and handle. Because the knock on him used to be, well, he loves doing all this exotic stuff, but sometimes players are thinking too much. He's really learned, like, okay, when can I get complex? When do I need to keep it simple? What kind of players do I want on my team? It's been cool to watch. He's like, it's a profession where if you just keep at it and you actually stay open to it your entire life, like keep your mind open to it, you get better with age, like a fine wine.
Yeah, indeed. All right, the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. You can sign up at radio.com/picks. Compete with me and several other hosts from around the country. I'm doing atrociously in it, so you should be able to beat me fairly easily. You just got to pick winners. No point spreads. That's why I suck at it. There's no point spreads. There you go. That's my excuse. Radio.com/picks. Go to @SportsRadio610 to vote in our Texans head coach listener bracket. Brian Schottenheimer is working over Kevin O'Connell right now in a 4-5 matchup. The 5 seed is winning pretty substantially right now. So you can go vote online on that. Seth, until tomorrow, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and rugby tackling drills to you.
Thank you, sir. For Ben Gary, for Seth Payne, I am Sean Pendergast. In the Loop, up next, Landry Locker, John Lopez, and Figgy Fig. Stay tuned for them. We'll be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.
They're tremendous.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.